The day's biggest stories, the people behind the headlines, the conversations you won't hear anywhere else. I'm Christy Strasser. You're listening to Odyssey's On Deadline. Let's discuss a couple of hot topics, starting off with the fact a new poll shows Donald Trump's renaming of Lake Ontario as Lake America is deeply unpopular among the public. The Ipsos/Reuters poll, published Tuesday, reported that 63% of respondents oppose Lake Ontario's renaming, and that disapproval is across party lines. Just one-third of Republicans approved of the executive order, while 43% were in opposition. Here's WCCO in Minneapolis.
President Trump's latest move in his trade war tit-for-tat with Canada, renaming one of the Great Lakes.
We're going to be changing the name of Lake Ontario, effective immediately, to Lake America. That's going to take place right now as I sign the order.
New York won't be calling it that. That's the response from New York Governor Kathy Hochul.
I'm speechless. It is so patently absurd.
And at least one Republican is calling out the president, Wisconsin Congressman Tom Tiffany.
I think we should leave the Great Lakes. The Great Lakes are Great Lakes, and we should leave them that way.
Yes. Dave Packer, ABC News.
The leader of the Seneca Nation in upstate New York, J. Conrad Seneca, says Trump's action shows blatant disrespect for the indigenous people who named the lake.
Because he's having a disagreement with Canada over his tariffs and things like that. You know, these shoot-from-the-hip reactions, you know, they're not something you expect from the president of the United States.
The Seneca leader says the change also violates a more than 225-year-old treaty.
If you look at Google Maps today, it now says Lake America, where Lake Ontario used to be, but only in the U.S. Google says it's following protocol after President Trump signed an executive order in this trade war. People in Canada will see Lake Ontario, which Ontario Premier Doug Ford says it is.
Well, it's always going to be Lake Ontario, now and forever. President Trump can call it whatever he wants, but I can tell you the rest of the world will always call it Lake Ontario.
Google says users outside the U.S. and Canada will be seeing both names. Wayne Cabot, ABC News.
Andy Luger, the two-time former U.S. Attorney for the District of Minnesota, is with us. This Lindsey Clancy case has generated a lot of interest. It's a very emotional situation. I don't want to talk about as much about the case, but what's going on. Yeah. This is a reminder. This is the mom who was battling a severe form of postpartum, a psychosis. And postpartum is legit. Anyone who tries to downplay it and doesn't acknowledge it, I think you're being cruel. I don't think you're being fair. But this is also a woman who killed her kids, tried to kill herself. Should we still have, in cases, the requirement of all 12?
Yes.
How come?
Because I think it is really assures the defendant's rights. Even as a prosecutor, you want to make sure that you're getting that everybody is all in on this, that you've convinced people. There's always in the, not always, there's sometimes in the back of your mind, is this person really not guilty? Is there a question? You shouldn't feel that way often, but when you do, you want a guilty verdict that's unanimous, that's beyond a reasonable doubt, that nobody could question.
Yep. Do you think it will ever change? Because you know this better than I. Are cases like this, and who knows where this is going to go, or other cases, and people have that conversation again. Is that bar and trying to come up with what reasonable doubt really means? Like, mm-hmm. Your interpretation as a brilliant lawyer versus me as just somebody who pays attention to it, yours is going to be more astute, but it's a subjective situation. Could you ever see a wave where enough judges, lawyers would say, we think it should even be possible as low as 10-2.
No, I don't. It's the power of the government to bring charges is really overwhelming. The government's got the resources. Government decides which cases they want to bring. I think we all are better off holding the government to the highest standard possible. And I say that, you know, as somebody who spent a career as a prosecutor, we want to protect ourselves,
yep,
from a runaway government and a unanimous jury, beyond a reasonable doubt, does that.
When it is a noteworthy case, infamous case, well-covered case like this is, and obviously Feeding Our Future became enormous in this state, and you deserve endless credit for what you've done with fraud here. What approach is different when you're getting ready for a case like that?
You really can't help yourself, but I mean, I've tried a number of cases that were high profile, and you know there'll be a lot of scrutiny, and you take it that much more seriously. You're not supposed to, but I think anybody would tell you, with the whole world watching your trial, you want to make sure you show the world that the system works, that the government works. And I've tried cases in empty courtrooms, and I've tried cases in packed courtrooms with, you know, a New York Times reporter sitting in the front row. You want to prove not only that you're up to it,
yep,
but that the government stands for justice, and there's the little extra pressure.
Yep. Should more of these noteworthy cases be available to all of the public, as opposed to just the folks who are willing to wait in line and the family members who are given the access they're given?
You mean like cameras in the courtroom?
Yep.
Yeah, no. Cameras in the courtroom change so much. And all of a sudden, and we saw it with, you know, the OJ trial, and, you know, maybe that's an extreme example.
It is, right?
Right.
Isn't that the ultimate?
But yeah. Still, it can become performative, and it becomes everybody starts acting a little bit, and there's a little bit more to it. I don't like that. And I think that's a big negative to putting cameras in the courtroom. I think justice is done in that room. And we have reporters reporting about it. Now people, there are times he'd be tweeting line by line what people were saying.
Yeah.
And
you don't have a problem with that?
No.
While in the courtroom?
No. I think that's fine.
So can I push back on that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Why shouldn't the public be able to, you know, glean this on their own, as opposed to feeling like, hey, you know what, Lou, I think you got that one slightly wrong. And I know that because I'm actually consuming it myself.
Yeah, I get that's a great point, and I understand that. The downside is it can become a performance.
Yes.
And I literally want justice served in that room with the people who are there. And it protects everybody's rights who's there. I understand that it's not as accessible and as transparent as some people would want. And that's why they want cameras in the courtroom. And I get it. I think there's an unintended consequence that I want to guard against.
Viewers across the country have been engrossed in the trial, which is being streamed on many major platforms, including YouTube. And there's news about YouTube. Here's more from KCBS in the Bay Area.
Bloomberg's Alexandra Levine. YouTube has creators with tens of millions of followers, so it's obvious to see where people could be going. So how will shopping on YouTube work? How can people buy stuff on YouTube?
Well, to be clear, people have been able to buy things through YouTube already for many years. They've already got many small brands and also enormous retailers on there, including all the ones that you've heard of, you know, Walmart, Target, Home Depot, Lowe's, and many others. I think what's different now is that YouTube is really making a push to make it more seamless than ever to tag products in their videos and live streams. And each time a creator, a creator behind these videos tags a product, people are able to click into the videos as they're watching, learn more about the products, and buy the products from there if they're interested. And those creators are taking a cut from it. Until now, they were not able to do this seamlessly with Amazon products in particular, despite the creator community asking for quite a while at this point for that capability to exist. And so what's changing now is that Amazon has come on as its newest affiliate partner, and they expect that sales are going to flow to Amazon accordingly.
Could this put YouTube in stronger competition with TikTok shopping?
You know, I think it's a really good question. TikTok has already launched its own sort of different partnership with Amazon, but its own partnership with Amazon nonetheless. And this is already a couple of years ago. I think it's fair to say that TikTok Shop is leaps and bounds ahead of YouTube on shopping, just in terms of the sort of the cult popularity of it, the virality of it. But I do think it's worth noting that YouTube shopping could gain traction. They said when we interviewed them that the GMV for YouTube shopping has grown 13 times from the beginning of 2024 to the beginning of 2026. So it is showing that there is traction there. But I do think that TikTok Shop has had several years of a really big start, and I think it remains to be seen just how successfully YouTube shopping can catch up.
What kind of a role will AI play in YouTube shopping?
You know, AI tools, especially tools powered by Gemini, have been integrated into the shopping experience already, into the YouTube viewing experience already. But I think the main role here is going to be in helping creators more easily tag products in their videos. So if I'm a creator and I'm talking about my five favorite makeup products in a video, as I'm speaking, the AI will be able to tell and then suggest what products I'm likely referring to, and they'll be able to suggest those so that I can quickly tag, upload my video, and then go from there. So I think that's probably the main way that we'll see AI play a larger role in the shopping experience.
A lot of products in the TikTok shop come from China. So will Trump's beef with Canada force our neighbor in the north to turn to China as their trade partner? Here's WBEN in Buffalo.
I'm Susan Rose.
I'm Brian Mazurowski.
GM workers in Canada have approved a new labor deal that will keep some GM truck production in Ontario as the U.S.-Canada trade war puts the North American auto industry under growing pressure.
The agreement calls for GM to invest more than $700 million in its Canadian operations to build the next generation GMC Sierra pickup. This as President Trump threatens to raise tariffs on Canadian vehicles, auto parts, and other products to 50% starting January 1st after trade talks with Canada broke down. The president has said he wants auto production and jobs here. Higher Canadian tariffs could put pressure on automakers, workers, and consumers. And just because Canadian workers approved a potential GM investment in Canada, it doesn't mean that GM shareholders or the company has. Jeff Manasso, Fox News.
The shores of Lake Ontario, some wondering what to do now with that Lake Ontario name. Here's WBEN's Tom Puckett.
President Trump's name change of Lake Ontario to Lake America was not the first, says Robert Emerson of Old Fort Niagara.
Back in the 17th century, it was called Lake St. Louis, it was called Lake Frontenac, it was called Lake Cataraqui, but it seems like about the middle of the 17th century, they started calling it Lake Ontario, and throughout the time period that we deal with, it's been known that way, so we don't plan on making any changes.
He says exhibits and brochures have the Lake Ontario name, and he does not anticipate changes to that anytime soon.
Things seem to be used at different rates of time, so I think, you know, for the foreseeable future, we're well-stocked with our brochures and so forth. Now, changing exhibit labels is another matter. It's a bit of expense to that. So we're not planning on making any changes in the near future.
Thanks, Tom. A group of New York State sheriffs are taking Governor Kathy Hochul to court for refusing to end an ICE agreement that limits them from cooperating with the agency.
I spoke with one of the New York sheriffs taking Hochul to court, and he says the governor is making this simply about politics, and they are stripping the locally elected sheriffs of a tool that they use to keep these communities safe. So the new law ends New York law enforcement agencies' 287G agreements with ICE, partnerships that allow trained local officers to identify potentially removable offenders and transfer them to ICE custody. Cattaraugus County Sheriff Eric Butler says this is going to force ICE agents to track down suspects in the community instead of taking them into custody inside of a secure jail. Now, he joined 14 other sheriffs now suing to block this law.
Hochul stands behind her decision as she is campaigning for re-election, saying the agreement still allows for cooperation if real violent crimes are committed.
Lindsay Clancy.
Yesterday, the jury was here the entire day.
It's up to a jury. If they have a question, they send a note. If they don't, they seem very focused and obviously they don't have any questions right now.
The judge told the jury they can consider if prescription drugs impaired Clancy during the killings. The jury's one and only note so far involved reviewing her prescription pills. In the 4 months leading up to the killings, Clancy received 32 prescriptions and 13 psychiatric drugs.
Clancy charged with murdering her three children in 2023. She faces life in prison if convicted.
Dozens of police officers around the nation are being accused of misusing flock cameras, using them to track or stalk people.
For years, law enforcement were able to search Flock's nationwide database largely unmonitored until now. Dozens of officers across the country have been accused or charged after secretly tracking their exes, romantic interests, even family members. An officer in Texas now faces 100 felony counts for searching his ex-girlfriend's car over 10,000 times. In Florida, a Haines City police officer was arrested after using fake reasons to search his wife's car hundreds of times, claiming it was missing and involved with drugs and narcotics when it wasn't. And in the Florida Keys, a former sheriff's deputy used Flock data to follow an actress he met while working on a TV show. The arrest report says he almost caused a head-on crash in order to pull her over to flirt.
That's Dana Marie McNichol reporting.
Wow.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.